You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Forced fun at work is the worst. Am I right? Well, today I learned the value of real fun. I talked to Sean Madden, serial entrepreneur in the social sports industry and the founder and ambassador of fun at Underdog Sports League, League Lab Software, and Fun Corp Parties and Events. We talk about how to create real fun and friendship building at work. I know it sounds silly, but I encourage you to listen with an open mind about the value of real fun on your happiness, your productivity, and your creativity, not only for yourself, but for the teams around you and for team building. Now, Sean's innovator archetype on our innovation assessment, the IQE, is an experiential imaginative. Oh, you're going to hear so much of it. So if you listen to our conversation, you'll hear how he innovates in motion, how he takes ideas and gets them out of his head and experiments with them and innovates in that experimentation. That's the experiential side. And how he's able to create novel solutions for challenges for himself and his clients. I think that's why that he's so good at what he does. That's the imaginative side. You're going to hear how that experiential imaginative combo really propels him forward. All right, let's have some fun. Woohoo! Sean, welcome to the show. This is going to be so interesting today.
Yes, I hope it's a lot of fun.
So let's start by help us understand what friend building is and why it's not this kind of super fluffy thing, but something that actually impacts the success of business and the bottom line.
Sure. So friend building is basically the idea of creating better social connections and friendships in your workplace to have a better workplace culture. So a lot of companies, you know, instantly they hear the friend word and they instantly get super nervous. The friend word might as well be another F word. Fun and friends in the workplace might as well be an F word.
Yeah, we're trying to get business done here.
Yeah, right. So people are just going to be hanging out and socializing and gossiping. And what the science actually shows is that actually isn't necessarily a bad thing. So obviously there can be some downsides to friends in the workplace, but you know, the science kind of shows that the upsides far outweigh the downsides. And so maybe think about it in terms of, we like to use the idea of kind of a, maybe even a leaky window. So if you were an entrepreneur, you ran a small business and you turned your heat on because you were in Minnesota or something in the wintertime, and all the heat was leaking out of your window. And I came to you and said, hey, I can save you a few $1,000 a year because you're going to fix this leak that's in your wall or your window. You'd say, wow, that's great. And entrepreneurs love to find those, you know, solve those solutions. I save money on my phone bill. I save money on this program. What we think is that there's a lot of valuable productivity and engagement and communication that's leaking out your window because a lot of companies have a very, very low level of social capital and social connections and friendship in their office. And so there's kind of if you want to think about the idea of maybe immunity or immunization, because we're getting to the wintertime now and flu season, think about two kinds of immunity. The first would be kind of this idea of miscommunication immunity, which is something that Dr. Ron Friedman talks about in his most recent book. This idea that you're in an office or office culture with coworkers, and you know, you got off to a bad start with somebody. You know, they rubbed you the wrong way. They were kind of a little bit annoying. They made a bad joke you didn't like. And the next thing you know, you just kind of decided in your head, I'm going to stay away from that person. And then every time there's a miscommunication or something that could turn into something bigger down the road, maybe there was a problem with somebody's paycheck. Maybe somebody didn't turn in a report or something on time. You instantly think, oh, this person's trying to get me. This person's trying to mess with me. You know, maybe Joe didn't turn his report on time. And, you know, you're saying, well, Joe's trying to sabotage me and mess with me. But you didn't know that Joe actually, his son was in the ER all last night because I had pneumonia.
You make up stories in your head basically after a while.
Right, yeah. So that miscommunication immunity is like your money leaking out the window. And a lot of CEOs will easily say, okay, yeah, let's turn the heat down and save the money. But they don't realize how much time and money is being wasted because employees haven't moved past the coworker phase. They haven't even moved into acquaintance phase. They're still in coworker phase. They don't trust each other. And so one idea we like to talk about a lot is kind of the idea of an Abe Lincoln friend. which is the idea of me even asking you, you know, have you ever had a great friend or a best friend before that when you first met them, you were like, man, I don't know if I really like this person, or maybe I even dislike this person.
That's actually my best friend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You will see that crop up a lot. And science actually, I think, shows that an Abe Lincoln friend is actually a better friend because you've actually kind of converted them, right? And actually, Adam Grant talks about this in one of his most recent books too. You know, instead of having somebody who was a friend at first sight, who you just fell in love with, we have everything in common, we're best friends, having somebody who initially, my best friend as well, his name is Ray, you know, same exact story. The first time he met me, he's told me now in confidence several times, the first time I met you, man, I thought you were the biggest jerk I've ever met in my life. And now we are best friends. So that concept of converting somebody over from as an Abe Lincoln friend is a valuable thing. How many Abe Lincoln friends exist in your office place where if you just gave the person a chance, you know, via friend building, if you just gave the person a chance, they would turn into great friends, and that could have a huge impact on your office culture and a huge impact on maybe even your bottom line.
So how does that fun showing up, how does that actually impact your bottom line? What's the direct correlation there?
I mean, there's a ton of correlations. I mean, at the very start, I mean, the science kind of shows that most employees, if you're talking about the recruiting side, that most employees would rather go work at a fun office or a happy office than get more money. So hopefully at the very start, you're just saving money or you're getting better talent. You know, a lot of times having people that are having more fun in your office, that's a better recruiting staff than your actual recruiting staff.
Wow. Yeah.
So especially in a super competitive, we're actually located out of Seattle. I mean, it's a fascinating market. You've got, you know, Microsoft and Amazon and Facebook and Starbucks, you know, and Boeing going head to head every day, you know, for employees. And it's kind of fun to watch, you know, from a distance. But the idea is that, you know, their employees who are saying, hey, look how much fun I'm having, are actually working as a kind of behind the scenes recruiting arm of a company. So if you have a fun office culture, if you're having fun, if people are engaged and things like that, you're going to find that the actual recruiting process gets a lot easier.
So what about once they're there? So I've got a company, I've got people. Why does them having fun, or how does them having fun make a difference for me as the company, the owner of the company?
I think it opens up a lot of windows, I think. I mean, there's obviously a lot of science about, you know, creativity and, you know, coming up with new ideas and, you know, communication, things like that. Just, you know, Einstein kind of talking about, you know, how play was the biggest part of his ingenuity and creativity. So you're just going to come up with, I think, better ingenuity and better ideas. But also at the end of the day, I think you're going to start to deal with a lot of this, you know, miscommunication immunity. And also the secondary idea in terms of kind of immunity is the idea that if you're trying to grow your business, there's going to be problems. There's going to be stress, as any entrepreneur knows.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be easy. If you want to get your business and scale your business, it's going to be hard. And, you know, so the issue is not that you have fun and friends in the office and all that stress goes away. The issue is that if you have these friendships and social connections in the office, people are actually, science says, able to cope with that stress easier. And so it's not that the stress goes away and that the pressure goes away of getting new clients and making mistakes and growing your business. It's that you're much more able to deal with it because you're doing it side by side with a friend. You're not doing it with a coworker. You're doing it with somebody who gets you, and you're going through it together. You're in the same boat.
So I want to jump ahead a little bit and talk a little bit about how friend building helps innovation with your teams, because you kind of started to touch on that, right? When you have more fun, Einstein talked about play. Why is that so important specifically to getting your people, whether that's, you know, a team of two, like I said, or a team of 5,000, to actually be more innovative and to bring more of those ideas to the table?
Well, I mean, if there's a lot of, you know, ways you could look at innovation, right? But one of the common, you know, models, if you will, is just the idea of failing, right? That most great innovation, you know, whether it's Thomas Edison or anybody, you know, we have this idea of, like, you know, them just coming up, or Mozart or Beethoven, you know, just coming up with these great ideas. And it's actually like, no, they came up with so many bad ideas before they came up with this great idea. And if you believe in that kind of, you know, mental model concept of, you know, innovation as a kind of a process of a lot of failures, you know, who are you more likely to feel comfortable failing in front of? If you don't know the person at all, and you guys are barely coworkers and you barely even know their name, are you going to feel super comfortable about being vulnerable and making a mistake in front of them?
No,
or
of course
recommending
not.
An idea that's just going to totally flop? Whereas, you know, if you're friends, if you've got some social capital built up, you're probably way more likely to not only, you know, make mistakes and encourage bad ideas, but actually joke about them and actually get to a better place for innovation, I would say.
So if I hear you right, I think this is so important, launch readers, to really wrap our heads around this. If you have that friendship and that connection, which I think, right, ultimately leads to trust and, mm-hmm. and feeling comfortable with other people, you feel more comfortable bringing those ideas, taking those risks, the possibility of failing. And to your point, I think earlier about stress, I mean, you know, innovation equals failure sometimes, which equals stressful moments. All of that is better. And I'm assuming if the absence of that is true, then you really start to shut down the innovation in your company.
Yeah, you're less willing to, you know, you get into kind of what I would call interview talk land, where anytime you talk to somebody, it's a very regimented, very, let me not make a mistake. You know, let me go with the status quo here. Whether you're talking to the executive team, whether you're talking to the boss, you know, let me stay out of trouble and let me kind of keep my head down. And I think obviously most entrepreneurs would know that that, you know, is not a great recipe for innovation if we're kind of just, you know, trying to just not make a mistake.
So I have to ask, because I think it was one of the articles I read, and you were talking about, like, how do you have fun? Like, how do you actually employ this? And I've always hated the idea of beer Fridays and ping pong tables as the way to do it. So what's the flip to that? How do we bring this to our teams?
So I don't know that the ping pong table, I don't know that I disagree with you. You know, we one of the questions we ask with a lot of companies we work with in the Pacific Northwest is, you know, what makes your company fun? And the number one answer on the board is the foosball table.
Oh,
and
wow,
so,
good to know.
So the foosball, so the foosball table is super fun sometimes. A lot of times when we walk into companies, it also is a giant coaster
or a giant
bookcase that's collecting dust. And so again, if you're doing the ping pong table, the foosball table, or the happy hour, that's not necessarily a bad thing. We're just saying that there's more you can do. And the question isn't, do you have a ping pong table or a foosball table? The question is, how many people who don't know each other are meeting at that ping pong table or that foosball table? How many people are meeting for the first time and moving through these phases of, you know, coworker to acquaintance to friend? And so most of the time, the people who already know each other and are friends are hanging out at the ping pong table and the foosball table. And or maybe they're hanging out there and there's this kind of weird guilt of, like, I'm playing in the office, but everyone else is not playing. And so I feel bad about it, so I'm not going to do it. And then that's where the ping pong table starts collecting dust. You know, the same thing holds true on the happy hour. Not a bad thing. But if the only part of that activity is just the drinking part, that's also normally a lot of pressure, especially if you have a company or even a high tech company with a lot of, how shall we say, you know, shy people, introverts, you know, people who aren't great at communication. A lot of companies will just go, okay, our people aren't good at communication or friend building. Let's throw a bunch of booze into the equation, with the biggest one being the company Christmas party.
Yeah.
And so you have the booze, which what you end up with is these social cliques and these silos, and you just end up with the middle school dance all over again, where people hang out in their same groups, and no matter how much alcohol or how cool the club is, you know, or how cool the ice sculpture is, you're still not actually creating any new social connections or moving through those friendship phases.
Well, and I think that the challenge I have with the ping pong table, which I think I'm hearing you talk about here, is I think what I see oftentimes when we go into organizations or trying to be more innovative or create a culture of innovation, they put the ping pong table out in the reception hall or the cafeteria, and they expect the ping pong table to do the work. Like, magically,
yes,
having that,
yes,
piece of equipment there is going to suddenly bring, you know, all these people out, and to your point, cross collaboration around the ping pong table.
Right.
And more often than not, it collects dust, or people play it periodically, but it doesn't actually do what they want it to do.
Right. So, I mean, thinking about the idea of kind of social interactions and social capital versus, you know, just social collisions or random collisions. You put the ping pong table out, you move the espresso machine, you move the soda machine, you change the office plan to create these collisions, but they're random collisions. And so
yeah.
An interesting question to ask is not, do you have a ping pong table? An interesting question to ask is, how many tournaments or activities have you scheduled at the ping pong table? And when we ask that question, the answer is, well, you know, it's there. It's the idea of, like, perks versus experiences, right? We bought you this perk. we bought you a virtual reality machine, we bought you a ping pong table, we bought you a Nintendo Wii for the office, and we're going to leave it there, and now you guys go have fun, and let's have the social collisions happen on their own. And, you know, sometimes they do happen with, you know, kind of the open office space or moving the espresso machine around or, you know, having people meet up in the stairwell, stuff like that. That's like a high-tech trend now, right? A lot of people are trying to create those collisions, but collisions don't necessarily lead to connections. They're just random collisions around the office.
So what I hear you saying is be more purposeful about it. Like, play is great if it's purposeful.
Right, yeah. I mean, how easy would it be to say, hey, we're going to have a company-wide, you know, ping pong tournament once every 3 months, but we're going to team you up with one other person that you've never met before in the office. In that construct, the ping pong table can be great. Left alone as a perk that's just sitting in the office and there's no experience around it, then that doesn't have as big an impact as it could.
The other thing I love about what you're saying is I think that leads to a lot of cross-collaboration and the intersection of ideas and people where innovation often thrives, but we don't get it in our day-to-day basis because we deal with the same six people every single day.
One of the biggest things we try and do, and again, sometimes companies will push back on us, but one of the biggest things we can do is try and break, you know, the silos that already exist. And if you have people in your company, you have silos. Even if you have a small company of 10, 12 people, you have silos. There's different kinds of silos, right? You know, there's kind of like a vertical relationship, you know, executives versus, you know, employees silo. There's a CEO versus executive silo. There's something we talk a lot about called a kind of a home and away silo, where maybe you have, you know, a home office with a small amount of people, but then you have just a ton of people working in the field. So you have like run a painting company, for example, and you have maybe 5 or 10 people in the home office, but you have like 100 people working out on the field with you, or 200 people or 500 people because they're outside, you know, painting houses. So the idea of this home and away silo, we see this, we've worked with a lot of companies in the last year and a half on this, you know, construction companies, concrete companies, painting companies, they have this home and away silo, and the people that are doing the work, the hard work in the field, have zero connection to the office. And how can you kind of break that silo? Because those people in the office, when they're asked to put a, you know, an extra shift in or asked to do some help, they have zero connection to the person in the office asking for that help. Whereas if you can throw a party in the office or throw a friend building event in the office and connect those people, there's a lot of big impacts that can happen from that.
You know, it's so fascinating to me too, from that perspective, particularly from innovation and how do you, you know, stay connected to your customers and build new thinking, is those people out on the front lines that feel so disconnected are the ones that have a direct connection to your customers in the marketplace. They hold so much wealth of knowledge and ideas that if we don't bring them in, we're not just missing that collaboration, we're missing the opportunity to come up with the next big idea.
Yeah. And so one idea that we've seen happen a lot in the last few years is that you're seeing companies kind of who maybe don't think they have enough for, you know, a big event or a big party. They're kind of combining companies. So they're kind of throwing like a client or a vendor appreciation party. And so they're bringing in 3-4 companies and smushing them together, if you will. And we saw that happen with a couple companies over the summertime here in Seattle. And that's hopefully a nice petri dish for collaboration. But also this idea that the frontline employee, like you mentioned, you know, think about it just even in the simplest terms, kind of like, you know, what is the likelihood that you're going to, you know, make a mistake your first day at work? It's probably pretty high.
Yeah, because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, we have a cool story of, you know, we worked with a construction company down in Portland. We threw this great, you know, family Olympiad for them and did a lot of friend building and had like 4 or 5 activities. And we got a great story back from them saying, hey, you know, when we move people constantly around to new job sites and new construction sites. And so instead of having this weird, awkward, you know, first day of school interaction where you're kind of, you know, in Abe Lincoln land again and you're kind of nervous about making a mistake, people are recognizing them because they had this party and they had these interactions on these teams we created on the fly. And so they're saying, oh, hey, it's my first day at this new job site, but I already know you. I already know something about you. I already met you. I already feel comfortable. And moving people from new site to new site or new project to new project, if you have a company in terms of innovation who, you know, you need to move people through different departments or different projects, that ability of that first day, that nervous first day of school becomes a lot different if you've got some friend, you know, some friendship built up and some friendship connections already established.
I want to go on a little bit on a side tangent and ask you, what's the main pain or problem that people are picking up the phone, you know, that's what they're having when they call you. And I'm just so curious because I think that, and innovation is a little bit like this too, friend building, like it sounds very fluffy, but they're usually trying to solve something. So what is it that you're hearing from your clients that they call and they say, hey, here's the challenge we're having, we're hoping you can help?
A lot of challenges. I mean, first off, you know, just at a base level, a lot of companies just realize that, you know, throwing some kind of consistent, you know, parties and events and creating some kind of company culture is important.
Yeah.
And they literally have no time to do it. And they're literally saying, okay, we've outsourced everything else in the company, but why is this company party still defaulting to me? So that's just a, you know, a very base level idea, you know, that they realize the value of it, but they just don't have time to do it. They're running their own business. But in a larger sense, I think a lot of companies are calling us and realizing that they can do better. You know, they had a party last year at the local park, and somebody threw hot dogs on the barbecue, and you know, like they had some beer and it was fun, but they realized that it could be something bigger and better. And you know, they did the zoo, they went to the baseball game, they maybe even rented out a movie theater, and they realized, like, yeah, that was fun. They rented out the hot club in town with the coolest DJ, and they were like, okay, well, people went and they had drinks and appetizers, but then like nothing really happened. And I think some of them do realize that they're trying to create, you know, a winning culture to have their business go to the next step. And on their own, especially, by the way, as a small aside, especially when the idea of kind of throwing the company party and the idea of friend building kind of always defaults to HR.
Right.
Which is maybe the way it should be, but also kind of unfair. Like HR has enough to worry about, but the idea of the company party just like kind of naturally defaults to them. And they realize, like, hey, you know what? If I'm like talking about something new, like, you know, breaking silos and friend building, it maybe shouldn't come from the person who's also talking to them about their dental plan or their health insurance plan. So they kind of realize that sometimes bringing in an outside person, an outside group, you know, who can do some of this stuff. And by the way, a lot of them like to blame it on us, which I think is great too. Like, hey, I know you guys want to be on the same team, but this is, you know, FunCorp running this event now, and they say this, and we say, hey, blame it on us. So, you know, at the base level, they're looking for just help with the logistics, right? You know, because they realize the value of consistently running these friend building events. But at a larger level, I do think they realize that there's a better way. There's a better way than saying, hey, we went to the zoo. Hey, we went to the baseball game. Hey, we went to the cool dance club. You know, hey, we did the happy hour. There's a better way to do this, because if you build a quality culture, that obviously can have a huge impact on where you want your company to go in the future.
You know, one of the things I read, and I think it was a blog post on your site, that one of your clients has said the benefits that they got out of it. Mm-hmm. One of them that took me a little bit by surprise, so I'd love to have you elaborate on it, is that they felt that their employees got a greater personal stake in the business, that was important to their business, but also that's what doing a working with you helped them do. So will you talk a little bit about that? Because that's one that I wouldn't have expected to come out of this.
Yeah, there was a great party. One of our most favorite ones was we threw a karaoke Olympiad for a high tech company. You know, no problem getting millions of dollars in venture capital funding, but a lot of basic simple problems with just, you know, people having conversations in the office. And again, you know, kind of, you know, not to be stereotypical, but a lot of programmers, a lot of engineers, kind of more of an introverted high tech crowd. You know, a ton of patents, a ton of, you know, IP, a ton of geniuses, but not a lot of, you know, a lot of introverts as well. And so we threw this karaoke Olympiad with the main purpose being, can we kind of unlock, you know, some of these nudge talents in people? Can we kind of unlock a few quiet giants? And if you've gone out to karaoke, you know, with anybody ever, and you've seen someone, you know, belt out that tune and been like, wow, where did that come from? That's what we love to do at FunCorp. We love to say, hey, you know, a part of building friends is kind of vulnerability, but vulnerability doesn't have to be just sad stories and tragedy. Vulnerability can be, hey, I've got this talent that I'm really proud of that's never going to come out in the workplace. And we like to try and bring that out. And so once you have that come out and you have 4, 5, 6 people just blow the doors off and sing these great karaoke songs, a lot of other things in that company in particular opened up. There was conversations in the office, you know, the social calendar started filling up, but also there was more kind of accountability and this idea of like recognizing employees and having an employee rewards committee actually was kind of birthed from that party, because people were like, hey, we've got so many awesome people here, you know, what can we do? And they actually formed a committee and took more accountability and responsibility for that committee. And we'd like to hope that, you know, some of those social connections and conversations and actually caring about other people's talents and interests, you know, help to foster that innovation.
So I don't know if you ever come across this, but sometimes I find that when leadership finally says, all right, we're going to invest in, you know, in the collaboration, the commitment, the friend building in our company, and we want to go do this initiative, that there's a little bit of resistance from the team, not because they don't want it, but because they feel like they've been to that rodeo before. So, and nothing ever comes of it, right? So, you know, they talk about it, they do it once, and then it goes away, or maybe they have one event and then it goes away. How do you help your clients get over that hurdle of the team feeling like, okay, is this just another, you know, another day at the rodeo? And I think on top of that, how do you help them reinforce it moving forward so it doesn't become a point in time exercise?
Well, I mean, so the biggest issue there is, you know, you've got to see it as a long-term investment. You know, it's an investment just like you would invest in, you know, your employees' 401k program or their health program. You're investing in their social wellness. You know, you're investing in, you know, if you had a company and you had 50% of the company had super, super high cholesterol, but as a responsible CEO, you might say, oh my goodness, we got to start up a corporate wellness program because we have this terribly high cholesterol. But if you had a similar situation and 50% of people were super stressed out and actually lonely at work, you might not even know that. Mm. And so it's the idea of viewing it not as a one-off, whereas, okay, it's our 10-year anniversary party. It's our 20-year anniversary party. It's a launch party. You guys completed this project, and so now I'm going to reward you. I think it's kind of getting out of that start and stop and getting it to be more of a consistent yearly idea of, you know, we love to work with companies who want to do 3 or 4 of these a year. And not just say, okay, it's our 20-year anniversary party, or it's our summer party, and then we're done. Or we do summer and Christmas, and we're done, right? Which is a very common thing, and nothing wrong with that, by the way. But it's just, you know, I think part of that idea of we're not going back to the same rodeo is saying, hey, we're going to try and do something once a month consistently on a smaller scale, and not just do these one big blowout parties for an anniversary or for, you know, or for the big launch. And then we're kind of going to forget about it for a few years. And I think that's where, you know, companies in some cases kind of struggle with the idea of, well, here we go again, because there's not that consistency to it.
I have to ask, I don't know if you're allowed to share any of these stories, but sure. I have to imagine that sometimes when you go in and do these, because you're bringing all this, I don't want to say emotion to the top, that's not the right word, but you know, the vulnerability, the connection, the collaboration, that mm-hmm. often actually uncovers other challenges that the company has in their culture. Have you ever experienced that? And can you share anywhere that, and really, I think actually it's a good thing where you start to get those elephants in the room out.
I don't know that that's happened, you know, at an actual party or event. We like to try and keep things, you know, fairly low key. You know, you don't want to force friend building. You don't want to force vulnerability. That can kind of blow up in your face. You know, if you have a company meeting and you say, everyone tell, you know, the worst day of your life, or, you know, right. Everyone tell your worst secret. You know, that's like, don't do that. If we haven't, you know, if that's not obvious, please don't do that. But I think when we're talking to these companies who do approach us and we kind of do like, you know, a consult call and we're, hey, what makes your company fun? I think the elephant in the room is, you know, this idea of, well, we don't have a very close company. We want to have like this awesome family culture, but we don't have it. Okay, well, what do you guys do for fun? Well, we have a gym. We have gym memberships. Okay, what does your CEO do for fun? And then you have this long pause for like 10, 15 seconds. And they're like, that's a really good question. I think something that's uncovered often is that people, you know, don't really know what each other even like to do. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about throwing a party. We're brainstorming for ideas. What's the CEO love to do? I don't know. And I think that's kind of a problem. If the CEO doesn't know, you know, and so they're building up this conversation. Well, the CEO is kind of disconnected from the executive team. The executive team is kind of disconnected from the employees. And right. You know, can you guys help? Okay, well, what does the executive team like to do? I don't know. What does the CEO like to do? I don't know. I think that's the elephant in the room oftentimes, is that people don't know, you know, forget about knowing, you know, dreams and goals and, you know, and secrets. They don't even know what they like to do on a Saturday afternoon. And I think that's probably normally a good place to start. And that is often what's uncovered in some of these conversations.
So it sounds like maybe one of the first things I should do inside my team is go and ask and make sure I really do know what people's hobbies are, like what they like to do when they're not working. What are two other things that I can do if I'm listening to this right away to help build up that friend building in my company, in my team?
I mean, a really goofy one, you know, if you just want a simple, you know, icebreaker start, we've done this at, you know, a few speeches, you know, once in a while, is we play highs, lows, and betcha didn't knows, which I play with my 6-year-old all the time. But really, the I don't know if you're from the guys are familiar with, or your listeners familiar with that game, but you know.
Well, explain it just in case.
Sure. So you know, we normally play it every day in my family. But it's, you know, what was your high of the day? What was your low of the day? What was your bet you didn't know of the day? What was the one thing that you'd be surprised to find out about me? And I think that that's a very simple, subtle, powerful tool, because again, you can say, oh, my high was, you know, I finished this report, and my low was I got stuck in traffic, and the highs and lows kind of get repetitive. But the bet you didn't knows, I think, is again, when we get back to the idea of that nudge talent. The idea of, bet you didn't know I make the best apple pie you've ever had in your life. Bet you didn't know I play the jazz harmonica. You know, what are the things that your employees, that your coworkers are really, really proud of, and they just need a little bit of a nudge to have come out? Where you're going to say, you know, hey, you want to sing? Well, hey, maybe you have a great impression of a politician. Well, I don't want to do it. Okay, why don't you do it? Okay, I'll do it. And you're like, wait, that took like a little nudge, and all of a sudden you really want to do it. And I think that's a great place to start. We play highs, lows, bet you knows here in my family. You know, that's a really simple idea to just say, hey, you know, what are you really proud of that's never going to come out in the normal day-to-day workplace, I think is a great place that any entrepreneur or business can start, because that's just going to multiply and magnify your friendship score, you know, over time.
I love that idea. And I especially love that what you just said about it, which is that people just need a little nudge. Like, they're eager to tell you. They're just waiting for you to ask.
A lot of the employees, I'm an entrepreneur for 17 years. I struggle with this myself. You know, a lot of employees are look at me like they're desperate. Hey, look what a good job I did. Look at how great I am. Look at me, you know. And I sometimes as an entrepreneur will obviously do a very poor job of, you know, noticing that. And so I think, you know, the bet you didn't knows is often a really simple, great place to start.
It's so good. And what I love about that, that's the question I kind of end all my interviews on, but maybe I should start with that from here on out. So I cannot believe we're close to end of time. So what's one piece of advice you have for all those launch readers out there who, you know, they're trying to be more innovative, they're trying to create that culture, they're trying to break through and do things. What should they be thinking about moving forward?
Yeah, we just think about, you know, start very, very simply. You know, we talk to a few companies and, you know, we have this very simple idea of start simple and don't force it. We have a simple idea. We have a friend wheel. You've probably seen a couple videos about that. It's like, you know, one of those silly, goofy promotional wheels you can buy online for like, you know, $90. But you can put friendship questions on that wheel. You know, you're probably doing something right now. You're probably running a charity golf tournament. You probably already have a happy hour. You probably already have a function where you don't even need somebody like us to come in and create a new event or a new party for you. You probably have something right now with just a little bit of addition, with the addition of a bet you didn't know round or a friend wheel or a talent show or a karaoke night in the office. You could probably just piggyback on something you're already doing, like that golf tournament, you know, include a friend wheel and have, you know, and say, hey, for every person who answers a question about, you know, your new friend you're teamed up with in your foursome, we're going to take a stroke off your score. We use those really, really simple ideas a lot in events we do, and people who wouldn't want to have those small conversations to learn about what somebody's, you know, favorite movie is or favorite food is or guilty pleasure is, we'll have those conversations and learn about each other and strike up friendships just because you're saying, I'm going to give you a stroke off your score. So there's a little bit of, you know, kind of gamification and monetization there, but really it's just, you're probably already doing an event where you can include a little bit of friend building in it and have a huge multiplying impact down the road.
I love the idea of just a little bit of nudge to get us as humans to open up to something we want to do anyway, and how great of an impact that can actually have on the satisfaction that we get out of our work personally and the contribution that we're able to make. I mean, it sounds like, you know, just to kind of close it out, that you get both of those out of friend building. You get you feeling satisfied and you up your contribution back too.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of math and science behind it that says, you know, things like sick days, things like retention, things your company's probably already chasing right now, engagement, productivity, retention, you know, maybe a lot of those ideas would melt away if you, instead of trying to tackle them one at a time, you just looked at the idea of friendships and, you know, ask yourself a simple question, you know, like how much more would a friend do for a friend in a day than a coworker? And we think, you know, a friend will do more for a friend will do more for a friend in a day than probably for a coworker in maybe a month. And so if you're an entrepreneur and you know it's going to be hard and you know it's going to be stressful and you know you want to grow your company, who would you rather go through that with? Who would you rather run through those walls with and go through those challenges with? Oftentimes, it's a friend. It's somebody who understands you and gets you at a certain level.
So good. So this has been so insightful. So where can our listeners go to learn more and connect with you?
Oh, sure. So our website is funcorp.biz, F-U-N-C-O-R-P. And there's a lot of, you know, we try and do a blog post once every 2 weeks about things we learn at events, you know, and then you can get our contact information there. There's a few videos you can watch there as well. But I would encourage everybody to give some of those simple ideas, Betcha Your Nose and Friend Wheels a try. You can see a video of the Friend Wheel on there as well. But give those a try. And, you know, if you have any other ideas on, you know, those simple friend building ideas, we'd love to hear them as well.
That's so good. I challenge all the listeners out there to go and check this stuff out and just do one of them. Just do the Bet You Didn't Know. If you do nothing else, I'm totally going to start doing that, which is so funny because it is my final question to you, which is said a little differently, but it really is a Bet You Didn't Know. What's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
There's a lot of surprising ones. I guess probably the more recent one is that I am a flag football referee for 17 years, and I am currently writing a how-to manual on how to be a recreational referee.
I would not have seen that coming. I can't lie.
That's fantastic. That's definitely my nudge talent. I have been a co-ed flag football referee for 17 years.
That's awesome. So, I will tell you in return that it was always my dream, and I never acted on it, but the idea of it sounded so brilliant to me, to be the first female NFL ref.
Yeah, and there is actually now a Lions judge. Yeah,
excited for her, and I can no longer be the first because somebody else did it and actually spent the time. But by the way, I just think what just happened is just a great example of the work that you do. You shared something. I asked you. You shared something interesting about you, which sparked a little unknown fact about me that most people don't know. So it just goes to show you how easily and seamlessly it can work when you start to have those conversations and build those connections.
It's easier to get to know somebody if they know a little bit about you first.
Yeah. Sean, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.